The King of Glory. Who shall ascend the hill of Yahweh? And who shall stand in his holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not lift up his soul to what is false, and does not swear deceitfully, he will receive blessing from Yahweh and righteousness from the Elohim of his salvation. Such is the generation of those who seek him, who seek the face of the Elohim of Jacob, Israel. Lift up your heads, you gates. Lift them up, everlasting doors, so that the glorious King can enter. Who is he, this glorious King? Yahweh, strong and mighty. Yahweh, mighty in battle. Lift up your heads, you gates. Lift them up, everlasting doors, so that the glorious King can enter. Who is he, this glorious King? Yahweh Saviath. He is the glorious King. Selah. Psalm 24, 3-10. I have found David my servant and anointed him with my holy oil. My hand will always be with him, and my arm will give him strength. No enemy will outwit him, no wicked man overcome him. I will crush his foes before him and strike down those who hate him. My faithfulness and grace will be with him through my name as power will grow. I will put his hand on the sea and his right hand on the rivers. He will call to me, "You are my Father, my God, the rock of my salvation." I will give him the status of firstborn, the highest of the kings of the earth. Psalm 89:20 through 27. If anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. Whoever does not love me does not keep my words. And the word that you hear is not mine, but the Father's who sent me. Already you are clean because of that word I have spoken to you. John 14:23-24 and John 15:3. Words mean things. According to Psalm 24 at the opening of this article, the title, "The King of Glory," is reserved to the Spirit of Life, Yahweh, not the Son, Yeshua. A generation is often considered to be a certain period of men, but contained within the definition of the Hebrew word dour, translated generation, are the words a dwelling place, a habitation. Knowing the meaning of this word places a different perspective upon those who would be considered to be seeking the face of truth in Psalm 24. According to this scripture and others like it, those who would stand in Yahweh's holy place would be those who live in, who dwell in, who abide in, who make their habitation in, who occupy a clean and pure perception of truth, not embracing what is false, regardless of what period they exist in or what tradition is handed down to them. Yeshua said in John 15 that the embrace of his word is what makes one clean. But he also said that his word is the same word as that of his Father, Yahweh, in John 8:28, because it is the words of the Spirit of Truth, who is Yahweh, that make one clean, we're told in John 4:24. Does this statement translated into the Son being the same person as his Father because he speaks the same words taught to him by his Father? The religion Christianity has made it so, in spite of Yeshua's word of John 14:28, that the Father is greater than I. And Psalm 89, we looked at previously, that declares the Son to be the highest King of the earth. Scripture makes clear that Yahweh is the only King of glory. His Son is the manifestation of that glory. Yeshua carries the mantle of the status of firstborn, the Son of the only one true Elohim of Israel, Yahweh, not the replacement God of all mankind that Christians have been taught is the same as his Father. Simply put, the universal God of mankind that the religion Christianity has made of Jesus is not the same person that Scripture describes the Hebrew Messiah, Yeshua, to be. This is not a matter of a simple translation of letters in a name from one language to another, but a fundamental difference in perception of who this person truly is. In the same way, the church and Lucifer have been found not to be scriptural entities in previous articles, the Christian religious God, Jesus Christ, is not the same person spoken of in the words of Scripture as the Hebrew Messiah, but rather the fabrication of an agenda of men to distance themselves from anything Hebraic. This statement should make those who have invested a lifetime into embracing this false concept extended by traditional Christianity extremely uncomfortable, because it means that they are not standing in the holy place their religion would try to convince them they are by merely mouthing epitaphs. If the Son is preeminent in all things, as the verse from Colossians 1:15-18 proclaims him to be, then the words of the Son should take preeminence over all other words of Scripture. And by his own confession, his words are the words of his Father. Christianity has successfully elevated its interpretation of the Pauline gospel as something different, above, and to the exclusion of the words of Yahweh and his Son. However, if Yeshua's words take preeminence over other scripture, and if scripture is a reflection of truth, then all other scripture must be measured against the truth of Yeshua's words first. That is what it means to be preeminent. Yeshua said in John 14:28 that he is going to the Father because the Father, Yahweh, was greater than he. Now, if Yeshua is Yahweh, then his words do not make sense, because he would then be saying that he is going to himself because he is greater than himself. There's more. In John 20:21, after the resurrection, Yeshua said he is sending the disciples just as the Father, Yahweh, someone other than Yeshua, sent him. Yeshua consistently admonished those hearing his words to pray to his Father, not to the Son. Every single epistle contained in the Messianic writings begins with some sort of acknowledgement to both the Father and the Son. Why would that be if the writers of these letters understood them to be the same person? But just by reading his words for what they say, even the Hebrew apostle Shaul, or Paul, declares in 1 Corinthians 15:24-28 that Yahweh the Father has put all things under the authority of Yeshua the Son, with the exception of Yahweh the Father, until such time when the Son Yeshua delivers the kingdom back to Yahweh the Father. If Yeshua is Yahweh, then this passage also becomes completely nonsensical. It is disingenuous to attempt to jerk one scripture out of context with what Yeshua and the rest of scripture actually says in order to build a doctrine around what is false to accommodate another agenda, which is exactly what the religion Christianity is consistent in doing to remove itself from every aspect of Hebraism. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Yeshua HaMashiach, who, though he was in the form of Elohim, did not count equality with Elohim a thing to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Philippians 2:5-8. If the words of Yeshua are the preeminent words of Scripture, as we are told in Colossians 1:18, the benchmark by which everything else is measured, including these words of Paul, then we must ask ourselves, what does it mean to be in the form of Yahweh from the Hebrew perspective of Yeshua? In John 10:34, Yeshua answered them, "Is it not written in your Torah that Yahweh has said, 'You people are Elohim'?" Yeshua was quoting Psalm 82:6, which says, "My decree is you are Elohim," translated God's, "sons of the Most High, all of you." Because those who embrace the nature of the Father manifest the nature of the Father. And this was recorded a long time before the resurrection of Yeshua. The English word God, found in Philippians 2:6 and elsewhere throughout the Messianic writings, is translated from the Greek word theos, whose definition is a god or goddess, a general name given to deities. But since the Greeks worshipped multiple deities, we can see how this cultural influence overrides the translation of the Hebrew name Elohim, also translated as God in Genesis 1:1, which is specific and unique to Hebraic thinking, occurring only in Hebrew and in no other language, and speaks only of the nature of the one true Holy One of Israel. Yeshua said in Luke 4:8, to worship only the one true Elohim of Israel. And he was quoting Deuteronomy 6:13. The real question being asked here is Yeshua divine? The simple answer is yes, but with a caveat. There is a difference between being divine and being a deity. Yeshua became one with the Spirit of life by manifesting the image of his Father, being in the form of. His credentials for becoming one with Spirit, divine, are that he manifested the nature of Yahweh in the flesh, which Philippians 2 tells us came from being obedient. The caveat is, so are any who embrace the manner, the example of life Yeshua led while in the flesh among us. The difference between eisegesis, reading into the text, rather than exegesis, reading out of the text, allows Christianity to take John 1:14 out of context and proclaim there Jesus as God, while ignoring the previous verse 12, which declares that any who embrace the nature of Yahweh becomes a son by allowing his Spirit to live in their flesh. This in no way diminishes the accomplishment of Yeshua's obedience to the Father. His obedience leading to his resurrection reopened the door for the Spirit of Yahweh to abide in vessels of flesh. Because of his obedience, he is worthy of all the praise, accolades, and acknowledgement afforded him, because he laid aside his status of being the firstborn in order to restore his Father's kingdom to all who would embrace his example of obedience. Yeshua said that he is the way to the truth of the source of life, who is Yahweh, by becoming the first among many brethren, leading the way and opening the portal to become one with Spirit for all who would embrace the way of truth in the same manner as He, by becoming obedient to the nature of Yahweh. In John 17, 20 and 21, Yeshua prays that all of those who believe in Him as the promised Messiah sent to restore the kingdom of Yahweh to the family of Israel be one in the Father, just as, meaning in like fashion, in similar manner, as He is one with His Father. Yeshua became one with Yahweh by manifesting, becoming obedient to the nature of Yahweh. Now, instead of there being one in three, as Christianity traditionally teaches, we now have one in innumerable. This was the fulfillment of the promise of the Father found in Jeremiah 33:14-16. So, if Yeshua manifested the nature of Yahweh in the flesh by becoming obedient, the question which then begs to be answered is, obedient to what? In Philippians 2:6-7, the Hebrew apostle Shaul is explaining the impact of the Hebrew Yeshua becoming a man. He says that Yeshua was entirely Elohim in every aspect because every son born into the family of Yahweh manifested the nature, the image, the form of Elohim, in the same way your children are formed in your image. Like a son, he learned obedience to the Father's words through what he suffered in life, the same as your children. However, Yeshua did not grasp onto that essence as though he stole it or was entitled to it, to wield it to his own advantage. Even though, as the firstborn son of the family of Yahweh, it was his right to do so. He voluntarily relinquished that divinity for purpose. His paramount purpose was to accomplish the will of the Father in restoring the Father's kingdom to the rest of the family, Israel. Prior to the resurrection, everything concerning Yahweh was external because of the first son, Adam's disobedience. Yeshua set aside being Elohim in order to become man, and not just a man, but a slave. The real word used here instead of what is translated as servant is the Greek word doulos, which means slave. Yeshua gave up everything as the firstborn status entitled him to in the family of Yahweh, Israel, to become a slave to the purpose of the father of that family, which was to restore Yahweh's kingdom so the rest of his family could enter into being echad with the Father as he did. This is why an atonement was necessary. Being conformed in the image of Yahweh can only be understood within the culture and context of who is Israel. Perhaps this gives us even more appreciation of Shaul's insistence that we have been grafted into the commonwealth of Israel. The reason Christianity has found it necessary to redefine the Messiah of Scripture as the Christ is because the Messiah of Scripture cannot be defined according to contemporary Christian culture. It is the reason why Christianity has elevated the Pauline gospel above and to the exclusion of the words of Yeshua and his father Yahweh, because the Messiah is a fulfillment of what Yahweh promised to Israel, not to Christianity. And we are either in alignment with those words or we are not. The Greek word morphe, translated form in Philippians 2, tells us that this was not some magic trick. If there is any error in perception about who Yeshua is through traditional Christian theology, it is that Yeshua is not fully accepted as being entirely human. We want a Christian Jesus who is really God wrapped in human skin. A superhero in disguise, Then we can explain away all of the miracles, the intuitive understanding, the visions of the future. Of course he could do all those things because he's not one of us. He is above us, we say. It becomes too easy to embrace this Christian concept because we do not want to think about the implications that arise if the things Yeshua exampled actually belong in Yahweh's human order. Embracing that tradition blinds us from being able to see how Yeshua could really be human and still do those things, because the implications concerning what that says about us, about what we believe, about where we stand in spirit, are just too devastating for us to consider. But if we are serious about looking at the truth contained in the meaning of words, in combination with the meaning of the words for likeness and appearance, verses 7 and 8, Morphe suggests that Yeshua was totally and completely human. Morphe means the form by which a person or thing strikes the vision, external appearance. Thayer's lexicon extends that definition to say, he bore the form of Yahweh. Yeshua was man as Yahweh intended man to be, fully dependent, fully alive, and available to the Father. Otherwise, how could he be touched by our infirmities, sympathize with our weaknesses, if he knew nothing about them? Yeshua is not some Superman or Spider-Man or Brainiac. He was human, the way Yahweh wants all of his family to be. What caused Yeshua to become echad with the Father was that while in human form, he manifested the image, the glory of spirit contained in Yahweh's words, in the flesh. When he was resurrected, he still had his human body of flesh. Granted, it was now a transformed body, but flesh you could touch nonetheless. Now you know why Yeshua can say in Luke 9:23, if anyone desires to come after me, let him first deny himself, then take up whatever cross he has to bear on a daily basis, and follow the example I left for you to embrace, because he is one of us, completely emptied of himself, completely open to the direction of his Father. So then, what hope is there for those truly seeking for truth? Is it to be found in the image of success the world would have you to believe is there and that Christianity has co-opted, usually thought to include health, wealth, and happiness? When Yeshua was on the cross, was he considered successful in the eyes of the world or the reigning religion? Everything Yeshua had given his life to was gone. He was betrayed by one closest to him. All of those he had devoted himself to had left him alone to his fate. He was despised and rejected by the very people, the family of whom he was born into. He was physically abused to the point of being unrecognizable. What wealth he had accumulated in his life was gambled over beneath him. Do you think he had reason to feel angry? What hope did he have? When Yeshua was laid in that tomb, whatever hope he had laid there with him, his only hope was that his Father would be true to his words and not abandon him. It was Yahweh who resurrected him. That was not Yeshua's doing. If the Father had not fulfilled his words, Yeshua would still be dead, and most probably forgotten. Our hope does not lie in what somebody else's estimation of what that hope should be. Our hope lies in the same words from the same Father Yeshua relied upon. If the Father does not follow through on his promises to us, we are dead duck, cooked goose, fit for nothing but to be served up as somebody else's dinner. So the question becomes, what are the words of the Father to me that I can have hope in? Yeshua is our visible, tangible hope of glory, manifested in us to this world. If Yeshua's word makes us clean, and His word is the word of His Father, what does that mean? What does it mean to be clean? The Greek word translated clean in John 15:3, katharos, is the same Greek word used in Matthew 5:8, where Yeshua is saying, "How blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see Yahweh," and means purified by fire. In Matthew 3:11, John the Immerser said that the Messiah will immerse those who follow him in both spirit and fire. Interestingly, he did not say water. We cannot have one without the other. To be clean, from Yeshua's Hebraic perspective, means to remain faithful to the words of Yahweh in the midst of the fire of tribulation, the circumstances the world would present upon our life. We are purified for the keeping of His words in the crucible of that fire. This perspective is seen in Proverbs 35, which says, "Every word of Yahweh is pure. He is a shield to those who put their trust in Him." The Hebrew word for pure in this verse is serapheth, which means to smelt, refine, to test, to prove true, from where the Greek word katharos gleans its meaning. Most Christians mistake the word of Yeshua as a mandate concerning morality, which they reason, if conformed to on a universal scale, will result in a peaceful and harmonious world where all men can live together as brothers. However, there is no indication of that premise in Scripture. When viewed from the Hebraic perspective, Yeshua's words are given in, they are seen as the words of Yahweh given to a particular people, Israel, in order to be a light to the other nations of the world. To become part of that Hebrew family means to embrace the words of Yahweh found in Exodus 20:1-17. To actionably embrace those words indeed are what purifies, allowing those who follow Yeshua's example to become one with Spirit, just as Yeshua became one with Spirit, so as to be able to abide in the present presence without being consumed. Only those who keep, who live in, who dwell in, who abide in, who make their habitation in a clean and pure perspective of the truth found in the words of Yahweh, as Yeshua did, not embracing what is false about the Father and His Son, are purified, made clean by those words. That is our hope of glory, the life of Yeshua manifested in us the same way Yeshua manifested His Father's glory. There is a generation that is pure in its own eyes, yet is not washed from their filthiness. Proverbs 30:12.